Well, I see it as an act of desperation. And for those who swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, I see it as a violation of their oath.
Democratic Congresswoman Deborah Ross is your guest on this episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast. We chat about unsubstantiated claims of fraud, the importance of Tuesday's Senate runoff elections in Georgia, and how she plans to work with her Republican colleagues from North Carolina. This is the Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Happy New Year. Hope you caught a rest, enjoyed the holidays, and that you're ready for whatever the world of North Carolina politics has in store. President-elect Joe Biden will be sworn in about 2 weeks from now, while at the state level, Republicans control the legislature, a Democrat continues to reside in the executive mansion. On this edition of the pod, a conversation with a former state lawmaker now serving on Capitol Hill. Deborah Ross was first elected to the state house in 2002. She subsequently won re-election 5 times before resigning her seat at the General Assembly in 2011 to return to private practice. Ross is an attorney by trade and has previously served as the state director of the ACLU. She's an outgoing optimist who has long been a staunch supporter of equal pay for women and criminal justice reform. Ross ran for the U.S. Senate in 2016, losing to Republican incumbent Richard Burr. In late 2019, after North Carolina's gerrymandered U.S. House districts were redrawn, she declared for a newly configured seat in Wake County. In November, Ross coasted to a general election win by nearly 30 points. And this past Sunday, the Democrat was seated in Congress. We spoke via Zoom a day later.
Well, it's definitely sunk in that I was sworn in, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. This is my first interview since I've been sworn in. It could never be as I expected it because we're in the middle of the coronavirus and there were new rules for the swearing in, and the whole day took much longer because we were supposed to be following social distancing for the votes and all the rest. However, the swearing in itself, let's just say it was chaotic because there was an objection to who could be sworn in based on the fight that's going to happen on Wednesday for the electors.
Any effort to block the new members of Congress from being sworn in failed. Ross called it a traffic jam. This parliamentary maneuvering preceded the certification of the Electoral College by Congress on Wednesday. I asked Congressman Ross if these procedural tussles over merely being seated are an indicator of looming gridlock and further partisan acrimony.
What I am hoping, though, is that after we have a new president and vice president, and after the Georgia Senate elections, that there's a little bit of calm that comes out, and that the folks who are bridge builders see their opportunity to rise to the occasion. And I think in the end, there are more bridge builders in Congress than there are disruptors in Congress.
So just a real quick follow-up. I'd love for you to share with me the first 2 or 3 names that come to mind. And I want you to tell me the most prominent bridge builders in Congress presently.
Well, we've definitely seen the bridge builders on the Senate side who came together to forge that kind of compromise. Of course, maybe a lot of people say too little, too late, but at least they got something done. There is a caucus that has more than 100 people called the New Dems, who are socially progressive and kind of pragmatic. There's a Bridge Builders Caucus. I believe that the leadership is trying very hard to build bridges, particularly within our caucus, because both in the Democratic caucus and the Republican caucus, there are a variety of views. And the speaker says that our diversity is our strength, but our unity is our power.
This ongoing effort by, I'll call it, a faction of Republicans in Congress to, and I'll call it, overthrow the election. It's not rooted in evidence, at least any evidence that has been put forth yet. It's not rooted in any facts.
It would seem to me as though it is really an objectively speaking, it's an unsubstantiated ploy. But I'm wondering how you would describe it at this point. Well, we heard this call over the weekend from the president and the secretary of state from Georgia. What words would you describe? I mean, is this unsubstantiated? Is this an attempted coup? Is this treason? How do you size this up?
Well, I see it as an act of desperation. And for those who swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, I see it as a violation of their oath. It's our job to, of course, question, and it is our job to protect the rights of the minority. However, what is paramount is that it is our job to recognize when the process has worked, accept the outcomes, and honor our institutions. And so the rights of the minority are very important. However, they have to be exercised constitutionally. And so we need to get away from just disruption for the sake of disruption and move on to making sure our institutions work for everyone. That's the majority and that's the minority.
I mentioned attempted coup and treason before. Is that hyperbolic, or are we unfortunately treading near perhaps an accurate description of what's happening?
I think people can describe it however they want to describe it. I think it, I prefer to call it an act of desperation. I prefer to call it a disruption. Whatever people want to call it, let them, you know, we believe in free speech, let them call it what it is. The more important thing is that in the main, folks in Congress are going to set a better example. And we are going to show the country that regardless of what kind of disruption comes, we can right this ship, we can set an example, we can protect the institutions, and we can put the people first.
First piece of legislation you're going to file is what and why?
So the first piece of legislation that will be filed will be the same piece of legislation that was filed the last session. So the speaker controls the first 10 pieces, and I've certainly agreed to sign on to the first, which is H.R. 1 that deals with ethics reforms and expanding the right to vote. Those are things that I have worked on for decades, both as a civil rights advocate and as a member of the General Assembly, and we certainly need to pass H.R. 1, and I plan on being a co-sponsor.
And what about the first piece of legislation that perhaps you will draft, or that you and a smaller group of legislators are going to put forth?
So there are several pieces of legislation that I think are important. And I think we've talked here, and I know it doesn't sound as broad, but in this dire time, about the importance of protecting our small businesses and our restaurants and making sure that they can come out of this pandemic. There is important healthcare legislation for our frontline workers, including paid sick leave, which is something that I worked on when I was in the North Carolina General Assembly. We have got to make sure that our workers who are protecting us are not penalized in their jobs for doing something that helps other people, and we need to protect their families as well. Those are two things that come front of mind dealing with the coronavirus. Of course, I care about the Justice and Policing Act. I have experience working on that, and I have some ideas for how we can have even more accountability. Those are some of the things that are coming up.
I talked to a number of people in the political sphere, and they mention a kind of a confidence or an optimism about the Biden administration being able to bring about a fresh start. And they think, some of these people I talked to, that the acrimony from the past 4 or really 5 years is set to subside at least a little bit. And I'm wondering what your level of confidence is that the political temperature, so to speak, is really going to cool it all here in 2021.
Well, I'm an optimist. And so we have to have people of goodwill who are trying to make a difference and do better. What we do know is that President-elect Biden has a history of working across the aisle. He has a history of civility. He has a history of setting a good example and not just picking a fight for the sake of picking a fight. I think he will bring that experience and his nature, his healing nature, to the presidency and rise above a lot of the partisan bickering. Will the partisan bickering go away? No way. It's here. It's going to permeate what we do. But how we respond to it can make a difference.
We're chatting on a Monday morning, two runoff Senate races in Georgia tomorrow. If Democrats win, it'll give your party tie-breaking control of the Senate. Much more legislation will move during the 117th Congress. If Republican incumbents win one or both, it would seem as though a much more stagnant and slower pace is inevitable. Is this pretty much kind of a preface of monumental proportions? Or would you describe it some other way as it pertains to the 117th Congress?
Well, it's crucial. Having a majority with Vice President Harris as the tiebreaker will be much, much more effective for getting things done. However, we will still be closely divided in both the House and the Senate. So we will move things much more quickly if we have people of goodwill on both sides of the aisle working to get things done. And regardless of which way it goes, whether there's a slight majority in the Senate or a slight majority in the House, it is my great hope that people will come together to do what's right for the American public. But I sure would like those two Georgia Senate seats.
Crucial, I think, is a fair way to describe it. So North Carolina's congressional delegation, now 8 Republicans and 5 Democrats. And I'd love to hear from you how you plan to work across the aisle.
Well, I worked across the aisle when I was in the North Carolina General Assembly. I was there when the Democrats were in charge, when the Republicans were in charge, and when the House was evenly divided. I actually came into the North Carolina General Assembly when the House was evenly divided. So being able to work across the aisle was, using the same word, crucial to get things done. I have already been in touch with several members of the North Carolina delegation, Republican members. I served with several of them when I was in the General Assembly. And so there are areas where we can work together. And I have had very positive conversations with several of them, and I'm hopeful.
So I do believe Republican Congressman Patrick McHenry was one of those individuals who you served with on Jones Street in Raleigh. I'm wondering, of the 8 Republican colleagues, 8 Republican members of the North Carolina congressional delegation, how many of their cell phone numbers do you have?
5.
5. Okay. And will you pursue the other 3?
I've reached out to the other 3. And actually, I know the other 3. I won't tell you their names, but I do know the other 3, and I feel confident that my connections with them will allow us to have, at the very least, a civil relationship.
Glancing at the clock, I'm going to go various and sundry. The Fresh Women of the 117th Congress, Politico ran an article, which I think you saw, I feel like you might have retweeted over the holiday weekend, titled in part, Badasses in Their Own Right. Are you a badass?
Absolutely. I've done things that people have, just thought were not possible. And I think what that article reflected is that you've got a bunch of women who have come to Congress who are willing to do the hard work and not willing to take a back seat.
The longtime leader of the North Carolina Senate, Mark Basnight, passed away a week ago today, I believe it was. It was Monday the 28th. I'm wondering, if you've got a reflection or a memory or something that triggered for you here in the past few days that you'd be willing to share with us.
Well, he was an extraordinary individual, and I will say one of the things that I remember was that was very well received by his office and by him was one of the first pieces of legislation I worked on as a freshman, it was getting the minimum wage for state employees raised to $10 an hour at that point. And I had a bill to do it on the House side. And Katie Dorsett, who's no longer with us, had a bill to do it on the Senate side. And the Senate was doing the budget first. And I remember going over to the Senate side and talking about getting that into the budget. And he and his staff were so supportive of the lower paid state employees and the need for them to earn more than the minimum wage. And we got that in the Senate budget. And then it was just my job to protect it in the House budget. But that's a real reflection of Mark Basnight, that he didn't just think about high wage earners or influential people when he was in a position of power. He thought about people who were earning the minimum wage and what it would mean for their families to just have a few dollars more an hour in income. And that's the kind of person he was. And he made something easy that could have been very hard.
I'm out of time, but I want to at least give you the floor. Is there anything else you want to touch on or address or follow up on or anything else?
Well, what I want to say is that we have a lot of hard work left to do to get this coronavirus under control. We need to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And I know that there are some people who are afraid of the vaccine. We need to demonstrate that it's safe and effective. But in the meantime, please, please have your listeners stay safe, stay healthy, look out for each other. We can beat this together.
Democratic Congresswoman Deborah Ross. She was sworn in to serve the 2nd District, which is entirely within Wake County, last weekend. You can find her on Twitter at Deborah Ross NC. Locate me at J_TIBS. Subscribe, download, listen, and share the Politics Podcast. Please, thank you. And give us your ears again on Friday. That's when we'll drop our next episode, a review of what happened in North Carolina politics. Until then, thanks for stopping by. For Deborah Ross, I'm Jeff Tiberi.